Bandwidth for this podcast is brought to you by CashFly at CACHEFLY.com. This is the iOS Show, episode 354, recorded on April 6th, 2018. Enjoy. It's time for the iOS Show, where we cover all things iOS and beyond. This episode is sponsored by Simple Contacts. Get $30 off your contacts at simplecontacts.com/TIOS or enter the code TIOSS at checkout. I am Michael Johnston, and with me is Jeff Gamet from the Mac Observer. Hey, Jeff, how you doing?
I'm doing all right, and I'm so glad we're doing the show, because it feels like it's been forever, even though I know it's only been a week.
So, but we're back without Adam, because Adam's doing something fun, I assume.
Because Adam has a life.
Adam has a life outside of podcast, which is weird to me. It doesn't make a lot of sense, but I'll believe him this one time.
Yeah, I know. It's totally weird, but yeah. Here we are.
So the March 27th event took place in Chicago. I guess that was last week? Yeah, because that's how weeks work.
The school thing.
The school thing, yes. Apple's school event, where Apple launched a new 9.7-inch iPad with Apple Pencil support at $329 for the layperson and $299 for schools, which is really cool. It has an A10 Fusion chip in it. So it's pretty much on par with the Pros. The Pros have the 10X, right? But this is 40% faster CPU and 50% faster graphics over the previous 9.7-inch iPad.
Yeah, so it's on par for some things, but it's what, half the price of the the iPad Pro.
Yeah, half the price of the 10.5. Yeah. So I think it has fewer CPU and GPU cores. Is that correct?
I believe so. And then it also has the older style display.
Yeah.
So you can, if you look closely, you can see that little bit of gap between what you're drawing or writing and the tip of your Apple Pencil. And it's the lower drawing resolution and slower refresh.
Yes. So it's it doesn't have the ProRes? ProMotion.
Right. It doesn't have ProMotion.
It doesn't have the fully laminated display, so you can see the air gap if you care to look at it. Obviously, the display is smaller. So the bezels are larger. But this is a really good move on Apple's part. I think these are going to sell like crazy.
I think they're going to sell really well in the consumer space, and they'll sell okay in the education space.
Okay.
And the reason I think they'll sell just okay in the education space is because a single iPad still will cost more than a Chromebook, and then to really take advantage of the tablets in the way that schools would want to, they need to get styluses. So it's either $89 for an Apple Pencil, because that's education pricing.
Yep.
Or they have to wait till this fall when Logitech releases their Crayon, which is a stylus based on Apple Pencil technology.
I thought the Crayon was coming out in the summer.
Maybe it is. It all blends together for me after a while.
I'll look it up. But the Crayon, actually, let me see here. I have some notes on this thing. So it's it works with any new 9.7-inch iPad, right?
And that's the only iPad it will work with.
Correct. Yeah. So it's $50. It's a more rugged design. It doesn't have the plug into the bottom of the iPad functionality to charge. It has a female lightning on it.
Just like your iPhone and iPad.
Correct. Now, I guess the cool thing about this, so it's $50, but in a way it has more functionality than the Apple Pencil in that it can be used on any 9.7-inch iPad.
Right. You just hold it close, press the button, and it's paired.
I thought there was no pairing at all. That was my understanding.
I mean paired in the sense that you can now use it.
Okay.
Not in that it's permanently locked to that device until you unpair them.
Okay, so my understanding was, and maybe you can help me out, so there's no pairing, and because of that, there was no pressure sensitivity, but it meant that a teacher or, you know, potentially a teacher could walk up to any iPad and be like, oh, okay, let me show you how it's done, and go at it, or in the case of having a cart of iPads, you could just grab any old crayon and start going.
Yep, that's right. The one thing I'm not sure about is I don't think that the way it pairs has anything to do with pressure sensitivity. I thought that was a design decision to keep the price low.
Huh. Honestly, don't know.
Well, it sounds good, so let's go with it.
Yeah. Yeah, regardless... So let's see. Yeah, charges via lightning with rubber grommet, has an on-off feature. Not a passive stylus, obviously. So lasts about 8 hours on a charge, according to Logitech. It looks good.
It looks good. Available only to the education market.
Yeah.
Which to me kind of sucks because I would kind of like to have one of these, even though I'll use primarily my Apple Pencil.
Well, you're also a stylus hoarder.
Oh my God. You have no idea.
You have, I need you kind intervention. Of a, yeah, or a bandolier.
Or a bandolier. I need a stylus bandolier.
Yeah, you do.
That'll be badass.
They also announced a new rugged case for the iPad with a keyboard.
That's the Logitech case?
I believe so, yeah.
Yeah.
Yep. The rugged combo 2 for $100.
I think that's a great idea for schools, and boy, is it ugly.
It's so ugly.
Oh, man, is it ugly.
It's,
Oh, man.
Yeah, it, pry and spill
it's
resistant.
Definitely a function over form design.
Totally. Yeah, it's good for schools in that way. So it's got a little carrier for your pencil or your crayon, and you can yank off the keyboard, which is nice. And it works with the 9.7-inch iPad, which does not have support for smart keyboard.
Right. So $299 education price for an iPad, plus $100 for the rugged case. So we're up to $399, plus $49 for the stylus. So we're up to $450 for a base iPad, if that's the configuration you want for your school.
Yeah, I'm guessing. Do you think a lot of schools are going to go with the keyboard situation? No. I don't think so.
I think the physical keyboard issue is more of a concern for us olds that grew up with computers that's all they had. And I think a lot of kids in school today are used to virtual keyboards, and it's not going to be nearly as big a deal for them. And of course, I know there's exceptions, but I'm just talking generally.
Yeah, it depends on the use case. If you're typing a paper, I wouldn't use a virtual keyboard. But if you're taking notes, perhaps, where you're doing a lot of diagrams and drawings and stuff like that, where a little virtual keyboard work here and there makes a lot of sense. And, you know, so my experience right now, as far as the new iPad goes, I've seen a few of them already pop up at school.
Oh, wow.
Yes. you know, my fellow classmates getting them. And I have a friend who does like homeschooling for his kids, and he immediately got one. I think these, like I said, I think these are going to sell very well. I think these are going to be very popular. You know, I looked at the pricing today and I went, wow, I spent twice the money on my iPad.
Right. But you also got a lot of other technology that's not in that iPad.
Right.
But depending on what you're doing, that extra technology may not matter.
Yeah, I agree. You know, and just to extend off of that, if I got another iPad at this point, I would get the bigger one.
The 12.9 inch?
Yeah.
You know, I have the 12.9 and the 10.5 inch iPad Pro. And I know so many other people that bought the 10.5 inch after getting the 12.9, and they were done with the 12.9. But man, I used the crap out of that.
Here's the big deal with the 12.9. It's the size of a piece of paper. Like that is the killer thing for me. And being able to...
The actual usable screen size, you mean?
Yes. Yeah. Yes. Yeah, and that means, you know, it's cool that the 10.9 or 10.5 in landscape mode is the width of a piece of paper. So I've been doing going back and forth between zooming in and then scrolling versus using it in portrait mode and then, you know, using some kind of zoom feature.
Mm-hmm.
But yeah, I would go with the 12 next time. But that's just because I do a lot of my notes. That's a fairly significant thing, but especially doing any sort of actual work on it where I am turning in something that is ostensibly a piece of paper, a digital piece of paper,
mm-hmm.
you know, that would be great.
Yeah. And I do a lot of stuff with my 12.9 inch that I would otherwise do with my MacBook Pro. So since in some ways I'm actually replacing a laptop with an iPad, the bigger screen for me with the smart keyboard cover is really essential.
Yeah. Yeah. It's, you know, it's, I think it's interesting in general, the use of iPads in education or tablets in general. I think this is going to be a huge thing. And I'm glad that Apple is finally trying to give this more attention again. They were really into education integration for a while back in the early 2000s, I think, with iBooks and whatnot. I think the explosion of tablets in education is going to be huge.
Yeah, I think we're at the beginning of the tablet revolution in education. Even though they've been available for several years, we are so at just the beginning.
It is now actually feasible to do, and it is being done. It's, you know, it's been done in my classes already, and being able to, you know, have an end to end. I walk into my class. I take notes on PowerPoint slides that my professor is writing on up front and recording them, doing all this stuff and, you know, having a Google Drive or what have you, and then taking all that information and having my books on the iPad and being able to do my entire assignment on the iPad and then turn it in digitally like that. That's a thing now, and it's great.
Yeah, and you can go through the entire school day without plugging in your iPad to charge it up.
Yeah, yeah.
And that's a big thing, too.
It's wonderful.
Yeah.
So as far as other... What were you going to say, Jeff?
Oh, the big thing I think that Apple announced that's going to help them the most with getting back into education is the software and services stuff.
Yeah. Yeah, so the classroom app that I didn't really know existed, which I don't know how relevant that is. But yeah, so the classroom app, which is currently is for, I guess, monitoring students' screens on their iPads, it looks like, maybe?
That's part of it.
Okay.
It lets you do a lot of the stuff with assignments and keep track of what the students are doing. So it's the software equivalent of a teacher's aide.
Okay.
Sort of.
So can you issue assignments through it, right?
Yes. And then you can monitor student progress and grades and all that stuff.
Cool. Well, that's, I'm sure, has a long way to go, because there are already tools like Moodle, for example.
Right. And then with G Suite for education, what Apple needs to do is blatantly copy G Suite for education. And they've done a lot of that with the announcements they just made.
Right.
And then either buy or copy, buy the company or copy one of the companies. That does the other part of the software management and integration.
Yeah. But, so they're extending it. So these abilities are now coming to the Mac, so they can manage things, more easily. I think they're adding some capabilities So the schoolwork app, it's going to let teachers assign handouts, track progress of students. So that's building on the classroom app. And I guess the ClassKit API is going to be available for developers to integrate with those apps, which I think will be very good for developers. That, if you want to sell some apps, integrate with ClassKit, right?
Yes.
Because then you can sell to a whole classroom of kids. And I think that one of the things that we talked about last time was the 5 gigabyte limit of iCloud storage that was imposed by Apple. They've now upped that to 200 gigabytes for free for every teacher or student involved in one of these school administered accounts. So even though I'm a student, or you may be a student, you don't get this automatically. You have to be enrolled through a school. It needs to be issued to you. But they've done that, and they've also added the ability for the school administrators, the IT guy, to issue iCloud accounts very rapidly through some interface, I assume, through this new app as well. But they said that it takes, literal seconds to blast out like 500 of these things.
That's such an important thing. And Apple should have done that years ago.
They should have. They're there now. And it's, all the school stuff kind of reminds me of what they're doing with the pro market right now. I think they've kind of woken up to the fact that they've ignored. Holy crap. I'm just realizing now. This is something that, when Steve Jobs came back to Apple, he basically focused on education and pro.
Mm-hmm.
And did a lot of great stuff in those two markets. And Apple has kind of woken up to the fact that they totally ignored that in the last, 5-10 years. And they really need to step up their game. And I think it's a good sign. I think it's a very good sign, because the technology that is available in the iPad, for example, when executed properly with the correct software and capabilities, is going to be better and more enjoyable in schools than, like, say, a Surface, for many reasons. For some reasons, it's not, right? You can't run x86 apps on there. But in a lot of ways, that doesn't matter. So it's good that they're getting back to this.
Yeah, I agree. It is. If they want to have any shot at having a serious presence in education, they need to be doing things like this.
Yeah. Yep. Okay, so we have more to talk about. Apple had an interesting hire this week. But first, we have to talk about our sponsor, which is Simple Contacts at simplecontacts.com/Tyos. You might be thinking, isn't buying contacts already simple? Unfortunately, as I've come to find out, it's actually pretty cumbersome. See, there's a law in the US that requires anyone who wears contacts to have a prescription written every year in order to be able to buy lenses, even if your vision hasn't changed for 15 years and you have perfectly healthy eyes. This is very expensive, time-consuming, and people put it off, which can cause eye issues from overwearing old lenses, which is a bad habit that most contact lens wearers are guilty of because they can't get to the doctor in time or can't afford a new prescription. Enter Simple Contacts. Instead of an annual appointment costing up to $250, and hours of your time, you can take their 5-minute vision test online. Now, this isn't a replacement for your periodic full eye health exam, but as long as your eyes look healthy, one of their licensed ophthalmologists will extend your prescription, saving you time, money, and ensuring you're never left without fresh contacts. Get $30 off your contacts at simplecontacts.com/Tyos or enter the code TIOSS at checkout. We thank them so much for their support of the iOS show. Okay. So Apple hired Google's chief of search and artificial intelligence, which is pretty cool.
That's really cool.
This is good. It's a good thing for Apple because Siri needs to get her crap together and do some good stuff. I mean, to be fair, I'm not one of those people who's like, I turn off Siri. She's the worst. I use Siri often.
I use Siri all the time.
And she's listening to me right now because I said her little name.
I'm sorry. I use the S lady all the time. I also use the A lady all the time.
The A lady?
Yeah. So I kind of have an open relationship with my voice control.
That's sick, platforms. Jeff. That's disgusting.
No, it's totally fine. It's... there's no secrets. We all know about each other.
Okay.
And we're all fine with that.
All right. All right.
So I guess it's more like I have a poly relationship with my voice control platforms.
Got it. So, well, I wonder how this gets. I don't know how to say his name. Gianandra.
I think everyone calls him JG.
Sure. JG. He will, according to the New York Times, I believe, he will run Apple's overall machine learning and AI strategy.
And he reports right to Tim Cook.
Directly to the big man.
Yeah, that says a lot right there. Yeah, so, all right, here's my take. Apple has a voice platform that's actually pretty good. People are just frustrated with it because they want it to do things that it's not, and they look at the simple building block stuff that you get with the A lady and equate that with artificial intelligence. So Apple needs to fix that perception, but they also do need to add more to what the S lady is capable of doing and make it more human-like. And so if you have the right guy that behind the wheel for that, and I think that's what this JG guy is going to be, man, they can really push the S lady forward in a big way. So because he's answering right to Tim Cook, I think that that's telegraphing how serious Apple is about making the S lady the premier voice control platform.
Boy, I hope so.
Well, voice assistant platform.
You know, they could. They really could. The capability to understand the language going into the S lady now is so good. And the things she's good at right now, she's very good at right now. They just need to just come up with a good strategy for expanding this thing and integrating it with other, I don't know that even integrating with other apps is the answer necessarily right now.
I think context.
Context
would be the killer thing.
Yeah.
When S-Lady can really wrap its digital head around our context, then it's just going to blow everything else out of the water.
Yeah. Yeah, I think that's even more important, for sure. So according to Tim Cook, here's the big thing, I think, for Apple hiring this guy. According to Tim Cook, he came to Google about 10 years ago. He spent 10 years at Google. He was involved with another venture before that Google acquired. But Tim says that he shares Apple's commitment to privacy, which is, you know, one of the big things that people have been saying is has held the S-Lady back.
Sure. Of course it has. Apple's not scraping every bit of data they can about us and then exploiting it in the most creepy ways. So, yeah. So, of course, the G-Lady can totally blow past Siri, S-Lady, in those ways. And it's because they know everything about us, so it's easier to anticipate what we're doing.
Yeah.
Or what we want, excuse me, what we want.
Yeah, yeah. So, I mean, this is something that I'm expecting we probably won't hear any major advancements for Siri until the earliest next WWDC, like next year WWDC. Which kind of seems like a bummer to me. I don't know if they're... Do you think they're going to have any big announcements for that this year, WWDC?
I'm thinking Apple wants to say something about S-Lady this year.
They kind of have to. There's a lot of pressure on them right now for that.
Yeah, but the things that will get that are like the really big announcements that come because JG is on board, that stuff we won't get at WWDC this year. It's way too early for that. So that'll be 2019.
Yeah, but I have a feeling there's going to be a very fast spin up of some interesting stuff that
I think you're right.
Yeah, we'll see something really interesting next year. So let's see what else. There were some software releases, beta time. So we got iOS 11.3 was released. Did we even talk about it last time? I don't know if it was released by the time the last show we did.
No, iOS 11.3, didn't it come out at the very beginning of this week? This week has been such a blur.
It doesn't even, it seems like it's been longer than that. But yeah, so 11.3 came out. Bug fixes, you got the battery health thing in there, which I think is one of the bigger...
It's what everyone wants, and I think it's the ability to turn it off is such a bad idea. I really wish Apple hadn't put that in there.
I don't think very few people are going to use it. It's nice to see that your maximum battery capacity is there. So mine's at 90%.
Yeah, all of that stuff, the battery health, maximum capacity, I'm so glad that's there. Just not the switch to turn off the power management.
Yeah. But were there any other... Oh, in music... You've now got this nice... They should have had it like this for a long time, but now when you tap on the magenta artist and album information on a song in Apple Music, you have the option to go to the artist or to the album. Thank God.
Finally.
It's taken so long, but that's a nice addition. Is there anything else super interesting in here that you're excited about?
I like that the weird capitalization bug has been fixed.
Okay.
And did you ever experience that? And if you say no, that means you just weren't paying attention to what you were typing.
I think how's it go? I think I've...
Where you'd be typing and a word in the middle of a sentence would just be capitalized. And you're like, what the actual frack, Apple?
No, I don't think
it wasn't a word that was supposed to be capitalized.
I don't think I noticed that, but
yeah. Well, everyone that you're texting now is going to think that you're much better and learned how to spell.
Well, thankfully, my friends aren't that observant.
Oh, well, I'll notice.
Good. Okay. You'll notice. Thank you. I appreciate it. But yeah, so 11, I would recommend everybody update to 11.3. I think it's primarily a, honestly, like this is the one that you were waiting for. If you're on like iOS 10 something and you've been waiting for the good iOS 11, this is the good iOS 11.
Yeah. Oh, business chat.
Yeah, you get the business chat. So I think that Home Depot has been fielding like hundreds of like BS test messages.
Of course.
In the last week.
Yep. Wells Fargo, I think they've gotten a bunch also.
But it's nice. So the way that works is, so you're like searching for, like you search for, you know, Wells Fargo in the Maps app. And you're like, I have a problem with whatever. You can, in the line where it's, you know, call, email, visit website, yada, yada, there's now a chat button and it will zip you over to messages. And then you can have a live chat in messages right there, which is pretty nice.
Yes. And if you look in messages where, so when you're in messages, if you tap the little app icon thing next to where you start typing a message, and so you get all the little icons at the very bottom. If you swipe from right to left, you'll see companies showing up in there now.
Wait, okay. Say it again. How does it work?
Okay. So if you are in messages,
yep,
and you tap the little app button so that you can see the apps, you know, like
so you're in an active chat.
You're in an active chat. There we go. And then you swipe from right to left. You can see the business chat services that you can access. So like in my case, I'm a Wells Fargo customer.
Oh, okay.
So I have Wells Fargo down in there.
Okay. I have nothing, apparently.
Oh, that's okay.
Yeah.
But yeah, I think the easiest way to get to it is through Maps.
Yep.
Find the business you want and then just tap the thing and boom, you're in a chat.
Exactly. So, so that's iOS 11.3. 11.4 beta came out less than a week after 11.3 came out. And so that's out for developers and public testers.
It was like a day or two after 11.3, as I recall.
And it's basically the, we still didn't get AirPlay 2 and messages in iCloud in iOS 11.3, so here's this one.
Yeah.
So that includes AirPlay 2 and messages in iCloud, as well as HomePod stereo sound, but you have to have an updated software on your HomePod, which does not exist yet.
Right. Yeah. So we'll see how many of those features are still around when 11.4 rolls out.
God, what... What would they put in 11.4 if they didn't put those features in?
I know. It's safe to say at least one of those features will be in 11.4, because that would be really bad form to mess around with all this stuff with a developer beta and then at the end be like, yeah, we're not rolling that out. So they have to roll 11.4 out, and it has to have at least one of those three features in it.
Okay, so I have two questions. Number one is, for messages in iCloud, do you have to have a compatible version of macOS?
Yes, you need to have macOS.
You have to have High Sierra
High Sierra 10.13.4.
Okay. Not a beta, though.
Probably not a beta.
Okay. All right. So I'm on Sierra. So that's interesting. Now for AirPlay 2, the primary thing with that is the ability to do multi-playback from iOS devices, right?
Yeah.
Okay. So to do that, they released 11.4 for public testers as well for TVOS. And mm-hmm. that I believe the primary thing there is AirPlay 2 support. So if I have, let's say I've got my Raspberry Pi for AirPlay, can I do multi-room with that? Like if, okay, let me rephrase. If I have a, like an old AirPort, an old AirPort Express, can I do multi-room through that? Or does it have to have new software to do multi-room?
AirPort Express shows up on, well, it shows up with AirPlay 2, so I'm assuming it supports multi-room.
Okay.
So, yeah, you can dig out that old AirPort Express that's been sitting in a box in your closet.
Yeah, it's right next to me. I was going to sell it, actually. So I've got the last one that was the wall wart.
That's what I have, too. I have one of the wall warts.
Which it still supports N, which is cool. And, you know, it's a pretty capable router. Funny thing is, you can only get about $8 for it on the internet.
Seriously?
that's what they're selling for, is about $8 to $10. So, hey, if you want a good router.
So that would be a cheap way to set up multi-room. If you have a bunch of extra speakers, just buy up some AirPort Expresses for $8 or $10 a pop.
Seriously, it's cheaper than a Raspberry Pi.
Yeah.
And easier to deal
Sonos.
With. Hell yeah. There you go.
Oh yeah, a lot cheaper than a lot easier than a Raspberry Pi.
Yeah, there you go, listeners. Don't say we never give you anything. Go buy an AirPort Express.
Yeah, but let Michael get his extras first so that you don't drive the price up on him.
Yeah. Actually, I'm good, so go for it.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, yeah. Let's see here. Yeah, watchOS 4.3.1 has also been released, and I don't think anybody knows what's in that.
4.3.1, let's see, that's the current public. Right? Mm.
There's no public beta for watchOS. So it's,
well, I mean, just current, public release.
Yeah. No. It's the current dev beta.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, yeah.
Yeah, and I won't run beta on my Apple Watch.
That's a good decision. Yeah, I like run my life alarms based on my Apple Watch, so I don't do that. But yeah, the current, the latest release of Apple Watch, the watchOS has updated nightstand mode, so you can do it in portrait and landscape, which is super cool. And mm-hmm. you've got the new the music app is back, in case you forgot.
Finally,
it's there, which is super nice. Although and by music app I mean music app for controlling music on your phone. So
yeah,
and it works quite well. So check that out. And I guess that's everything I have. I was going to mention the fact that Instagram decided to just drop support for the Apple Watch app. And
oh yeah.
And the only reason I wanted to bring that up is just because I think it's a good case of that was a dumb idea for an Apple Watch app.
Well, see, this is why I think a lot of Apple Watch apps are going away. And it's not because there's, you know, like Apple is driving developers away. I think it's because developers were making apps without any real reason for having them.
Yeah.
Like the Instagram Watch app. There's no value in that I could ever find.
Right, right, ever. Right. Now, and by contrast, and the reason they're dropping support for it is because Apple is saying every developer with an Apple Watch app must support the new version of the SDK. So there was the original SDK, and then there's I don't know, we're probably up to like three or four, but I think bare minimum is like two, and Instagram wasn't willing to do that. So it's good that they're doing that, because it's kind of pushing out developers that didn't give a crap about their app, and developers that didn't give a crap about their app probably have apps that don't do anything very useful for most people. So ultimately I think it's good. Now, here's my one of my favorite things that's happening right now for Apple Watch. A very good use of the current SDK. So apps can now tie into the Now Playing feature, right? So if you have, so for example, on the, if you're playing music through Apple Music, when you look at your wrist, by default, it'll show you the playback controls for that. And if you're playing some other audio thing, it'll do the same thing. However, if you have the Apple Watch companion app for that, while it's playing, they can show you custom controls, such as for Pocket Casts. They have their own thing, and they can add some nice stuff. I found in the end it really wasn't any benefit for me. However, for the MLB app, and I've given MLB a lot of crap over the years for their app, but they've done a really good job with it this year. So when you're listening to a game through the app on your phone and you have the companion app on the watch, it will show you a custom player where you have the playback control, which is basically player pause. That's cool. What's cooler is you also have three different panes. The first pane is shows you information, like current information for the game that you're listening to. So you can see the bases, you can see the outs and the you know, the balls and the strikes and all the information that's going on in the game that you're listening to right now. So you just glance at your watch whenever you want. All that relevant information is right there. And you can also scroll down and see the rest of the games that are going on that day. Super cool. You can also swipe over to the left. It will show you the standings of the various teams. And then it'll even, if you swipe over one more, you can see news and stuff. So it's like they have pretty much done the best implementation.
That's a great use of that Apple Watch app.
That's like the best one I've seen so far. So there are use cases. You just have to be good at it. You just have to think it through.
Yeah.
So anyway, do you have a pick?
Of course I have a pick.
All right, let's hear it.
All right. So my pick is an app called Textlicious. And this is from Delicious Munster. Yeah, so I have a new app out. So here's the deal. Textlicious, I think it's $2. And it's an app that when it's on your iPhone, it lets you add an extension to the whole sharing pane thing. So what you can do is put stylized text into apps that otherwise typically don't allow it. It's like if I'm sending you a text message in Messages, I can apply text formatting and, you know, like add italics or bold or underline, you know, stuff like that. And I can do that in Twitter apps and you know, so stuff like that. The one thing that everyone needs to be aware of before you totally dive into the app, and this is a limitation of the way Apple has created iOS. So what you do is you select the text you want to stylize, and then you choose the extension. It gives you the list of the styles you can apply, so you tap on the one you want. And then what you have to do is select that same text that you wanted stylized and paste. So it takes a couple steps to actually do this, but it's really cool.
Okay, let me see if I got this down. You select the text you want to stylize.
Mm-hmm.
You hit the app and the extension.
Mm-hmm.
You stylize it how you want, and then it throws it into your clipboard.
Yes.
And then you paste it back in.
Yes.
Okay. All right. Interesting. There are some there are some reviews on this page that call out the Mac Observer.
Oh, wow. Awesome.
Probably
because I wrote about it, because I think it's pretty awesome.
Yeah. But interesting. Yeah, they probably didn't read the article because it sounds like they're upset about it.
Oh, well. You know, you can't make everyone happy.
But this looks cool. This honestly, like, I can't think of another way to do this. You know?
This is the only way that I've been able to find to do this without having to, like, go into complete different apps and then hope that everything transfers correctly. And so what Will did when he created this app is he designed it so that it's grabbing Unicode. So as long as whatever device you are using to view this with has the correct Unicode character sets, then you see the text correctly. So it's not like anyone has to install extra stuff. It's just you've got it or you don't. And if you don't, then you'll probably just see boxes where those letters would be. And that's just, you know, how Unicode mapping works.
Gotcha. Cool.
So anyhow, I'm totally digging Textlicious.
Yeah, it's $2.
$2.
$2 for Textlicious. And you know what's lame? I don't have a pick. So I'm gonna lean on
I think your pick should be the MLB Apple Watch app. Because you basically just had a love affair with it on the air.
You're right. Yeah. So get that thing because it's pretty good. It's still the MLB app, but I haven't run into any issues that I had last year with it. So maybe they fixed it. But yeah, that watch app is pretty dope.
That's awesome.
I'll say the MLB app. Okay. So with that, our picks and the show notes can be found at theiosshow.com. Review the show in iTunes, leave some stars, tell a friend. You can send your feedback at feedback@theiosshow.com. This episode was sponsored by Simple Contacts. You can get $30 off your contacts at simplecontacts.com/TIOSS or enter the code TIOSS at checkout. All of our advertising is handled by Backbeat Media at backbeatmedia.com. Jeff Gammon is at the Mac Observer, macobserver.com. The TMO Daily Observations podcast. He's at Jay Gammon on Twitter. What else you got going on? Anything else?
I think that basically sums up my whole life right now.
Okay. Apple Context Machine, The Big Show.
Yeah, you said Daily Observations.
Daily Observations, yeah. He's on most podcasts. If you listen to a podcast, you're probably going to listen to Jeff at some point.
Probably. So either you're welcome or I'm sorry.
Yes. All right. And I'm at Michael Johnston on Twitter. And with that, we will see you next time on The iOS Show.
An iPod.
An iPod.
An iPod. An iPod.
A phone.
A phone.
A phone.
An iPod.
An iPod.
And an internet.
How are we going to communicate this?
The stylus.
We don't want to carry around a mouse, right? So what are we going to do?
Oh, a stylus, right? We're going to use a stylus.